Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Hello, I'm Stephen Scott, back with you once again. Robin Christofferson from AbilityNet is also here. Hello, Robin.
Hello, have they let you out of quarantine?
Oh, I'm back. I'm out of quarantine. It's all good. Andy's here as well, by the way. Hello, Andy.
Hello, hello. The noise you made before you put the microphones up was horrendous. So yeah. I think it's still lingering.
Don't get too
close. I think there's still a chance that the lurgy is still here. Yes, I'm back. yes, sort of. Yeah, sorry about last week, guys. I couldn't quite make it. Let's put it that way. In fact, to be honest, halfway through the week, I thought I wasn't going to make it. It was a bit touch and go at points, I tell you. But no, it is nice to be back. I'm still struggling a bit, if I'm honest, with the old lurgy. So I'm going to lean on you guys a bit this week. So heaven help us.
Not literally, I hope.
No, I'm not going to lean on you literally. No, it's fine. But we have got lots to talk about. And actually, it's a busy week this week because all three of us are going to be taking a lovely trip to the Google HQ in London for TechShare Pro, which is happening this week. And we're all very excited about it. I have magically made myself better just in time for the trip. How does that work? But yes, I have. So I will be with you guys. And Robin, we're going to talk about that in a minute, because AbilityNet and RNIB, to a slightly lesser extent this year, but RNIB are involved as well. But AbilityNet is very much leading the charge on this. So we're going to be talking about that. Also, we're going to be hearing all about Pitch Black as well. Andy has been interviewing for us. We were hoping to get this out last week.
Yeah.
But we couldn't, obviously, because of the no-show that was me.
Unfortunate circumstances, yes.
But tell us, give us a bit of a flavour as to what's coming up.
So anybody out there who likes playing video games but is disappointed that they are suddenly more visual in their progression as they get on, well, you might be interested to find that there is an audio-only game that's coming out next year, and I've been chatting to one of the team who's behind the development.
Are you into these audio games, Robin? Do you ever play any of these things?
Sometimes. I don't like the ones where you have to really think on your feet and kind of, you know, or you'll get eaten or whatever. I'm more of a strategy, adventure-y type, yeah.
Yeah, I don't like those ones where I get eaten either, I must admit. But no, I must admit, I'm not a games player, at least not very good at it. I think the closest I've ever gotten to enjoying a game was driving a bus rather badly in Grand Theft Auto, and then I moved on to driving a truck particularly badly in Euro Truck Simulator. I think I was watching a comedian, a guy called Chris McCausland, and he said, I'd be great at driving down a motorway, said, if they had those kind of bumpers either side like they do at the bowling, at the Tenpin bowling. So, you know, if you had those little safety bumpers, I'd probably be fine driving.
Oh.
But yes, games, I'm intrigued by this. And I feel like we're putting a downer on your interview before we even play it.
Oh,
But honestly, I can't sit here and say to you, I'm a huge lover of these audio games. I think it is an interesting concept. And I think the use of 3D audio is something which I think is going to make things very interesting. That's actually something we're going to be talking about in a minute about TechShare as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that is on the way. And Robin, was it your birthday that you got a new mug?
Lots of Amazon vouchers, yeah, and yes. I splurged on a smart coffee mug.
Oh, you, right, so you bought this thing.
I asked for donations. It was a lot of money for what you'd expect from a coffee mug. But yeah, so I love it though, really love it.
To tease people ahead of, you know, the review that we're looking forward to hearing. How much did this mug cost? Just tell us the price.
70 quid. But if you get it from the Apple store, Apple sell it, and that tells you how swish it is. It's 100.
What? 100 quid for a mug? Well, it better be a good mug. Oh, hang on a minute. Has it got an Apple logo on it? Because I might be interested.
There we go.
Okay, well, we're going to get to that a bit later. But first, let's talk about TechShare Pro, because TechShare Pro is happening this week, and AbilityNet is leading the charge. Lots of exciting announcements to come. Robin, you are the man, so take it away. Tell us all about TechShare Pro for those that don't know.
Well, I don't know why I'm the man, but anyway, so yeah, AbilityNet.
Well, you're a man. Let's put it that way.
The RNIB are working together on TechShare Pro. TechShare is one word, by the way, if you want to sort of look for it on the internet. TechShare Pro grew out of the TechShare conference that the RNIB ran for many years, and for the last several years it's been proified by joining forces with AbilityNet, as Stephen has just said. And it's a conference for professionals to come and share best practice and learn about, you know, cutting edge tech and everything that's, you know, good in digital inclusion and diversity and that sort of thing. And as Stephen said, it's being held at the Google headquarters, really swanky offices in King's Cross in London, on Wednesday and Thursday, the 20th and 21st this week. Now, unfortunately, all tickets are sold out.
Aww.
And have been for a while. There is a waiting list in case you want to jump on that. Just search for TechShare Pro 2019. And you can potentially get a place, but don't worry, because we've got your back. We have a podcast that we're calling the TechShare, one word, Procast, one word. And you can search for that in your favorite podcatching app of choice or online. And there are quite a few episodes. There's a main pre-event show that Stephen and I have done with loads of really good stuff, a sneak peek previews of the kind of content that's going to be coming at TechShare Pro, at the event itself. Lots of clips from larger length interviews. And after that pre-show landed, I've been putting out the full length interviews from those contributors as well. So yeah, that's really good. Now on the day itself, you can actually watch the proceedings on YouTube. There's a live stream for both day one and day two, Wednesday and Thursday. And again, if you search for TechShare, one word, Pro 2019 on YouTube, then you will hit the live streams. There's one for day one and there's a separate one for day two. You can actually get them by searching for TechShare Pro 2019 and then the date. So 20/11/19. That's the title of the day one stream, etc. But just search for TechShare Pro on YouTube and you'll get them. And you can follow all the sessions and things live. But what we're going to be doing at the event in our little glass box is we're actually going to be getting additional content from all of those speakers and expert panelists, more of a deep dive into what they are going to have covered in their presentations, and some more candid comments and that sort of thing. And we'll bring you that content after the event in a post-show event and lots more full-length interviews, we would imagine, after, you know, the stuff that we've captured at those 2 days at the event. And yep, Stephen's going to be there. Andy's going to be there. Going to be there. And yes, a fantastic time is going to be had by all.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. And we are really looking forward to it, because it's a chance to, like you say, to focus this to business, I think, which is really important. I mean, you know, this conversation with business about the importance of accessibility has to get going even more so. And it's great that businesses are coming along and supporting as well. You know, the more who can come along and learn about this exciting and actually in some ways quite sexy world as well. It's a whole new world. It's not the kind of, I think some people think when it comes to accessibility, it's quite boring and it's quite, you know, everything's got to be very serious. It's not the case, actually. Some amazing products being developed by companies. And, you know, I think back to the, now what is it called again? It's the Microsoft game.
Ignite.
The adaptive controller.
Yeah.
And what I was thinking about that, which was fascinating, was that I was hearing a number of able-bodied gamers were loving using it because it made their gameplay more enjoyable. And I just think that's really interesting to hear that kind of technology is being adopted. This is what's great about all of this. You know, this technology can be for everybody. So even the stuff that's made perhaps with disabled people in mind can also benefit someone who isn't disabled. That's the perfect circle, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. And another example of that, I mean, basically all the things that we as blind users, for example, or low vision users have been benefiting from recently, in, you know, text recognition, object recognition, all that sort of thing, AI, obviously wasn't designed for disabled people. And we're benefiting from, you know, all of the cutting edge technologies, the sort of thing you've been talking about there. And one really good session, which is an example of that on the day two, is a panel all about the next generation of audio. And that includes AD, audio description, surround sound, immersive audio experiences, and RNIB's Sonali Rai is going to be chairing that session. So that's an example of something you might want to tune into on Thursday morning, I think it is. John Payton, who's Innovation and Technology Officer for the RNIB, has actually written a guest post on the AbilityNet website about one of the things that are going to be covered on that panel, which I'm really, really excited about. It's object-oriented media or audio. And basically, we all know about surround sound and you have to have, you know, speakers in every corner of your room and Dolby Atmos and all that sort of thing. But actually, they, through software, have been able to simulate audio coming in from different directions, even if you're just wearing earphones, because apparently the flaps and channels of your ears are used to create echoes so that your brain knows in which direction or from which direction sound was coming. And they know, they've been able to analyze that and they can recreate that in software. So now we can get full 3D audio coming in from different directions. And with this object-oriented audio, they can basically, using meta tags, basically little tags of information, they can say what kind of sound it is, where it should be coming from. And for example, we know about audio description and, you know, if you want to listen to audio description, you've either got to have it on or off and other people in the room have to put up with it if you need it on. But with this object-oriented audio, they can tag that audio as AD. And they can have it on for one person who might be listening with earphones, for example, and off for other people. They can choose which language it is. They can have all the other people who are talking in the TV show or film tagged separately as separate channels, separate objects. And you'll be able to tell exactly where those people are talking. You can change their languages of just one particular person, for example, if you're, you know, have a different language. You can change the balance. This is something I'm particularly interested in because I just find it really hard to follow audio or dialogue on TVs and films. They just mumble a lot. And I can't, you know, that for me is part of the lack of pleasure of the experience of watching TV.
Yeah, and also
so you can change the mix.
If you're using something,
you can take down the noises, you can take up the dialogue, all that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you're excited by it. But yes, I mean, you know, I think the problem for me is that when it comes to audio description, that it's already kind of sandwiched together. So, you know, you've got someone maybe talking in a film or whatever, and then you've got the voice describing what's going on, and it all kind of blends into one. And sometimes I think it makes not a bit of a clunky experience, which I think a lot of people have when it comes
sometimes
to
the mix is wrong. Yeah,
yeah, that's
it's
right.
Really,
yeah.
Really hard. Now, okay, so TechShow Pro is aimed at professionals, and those are the people who will be attending. It's a paid-for event, but as I say, everyone can tune in, and you will get nuggets like that that are going to be of real interest to end users as well. So whoever you are, whatever, you know, your interests across all different disabilities, TechShow Pro, give it a go.
And if that's not enough, if that is not enough for you to enjoy, we will also be getting together and doing a bit of a fun tech talk for next week. So next week's episode will be from Google's HQ. We will be recording that. The three of us will get together and we'll all be there. So we'll have some fun. We'll check in with your email inbox as well and make sure that we keep up to date with what's happening there. But yeah, plenty of ways to enjoy TechShare Pro, the Procast. I should point out, by the way, Robin, this was my idea for that name. I just want to put that out there. I'm just putting it there. I'm just walking
trademark.
Away. Yes, trademark Stephen Scott. The check is in the post, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Double your normal fee.
Yeah, that's right. What is double of zero? I was wondering.
Email. We get email.
Right, let's get to this then.
We get your email every day.
Yeah, we get your email every single day. And we've got lots.
Here's your mail today.
Lots and lots of emails. Yeah, do check out TechShare Pro, what Robin says. But for now, though, let's get to those emails, Andy.
We're going to start off with Rod. Now, this is almost part two of Rod's email. We covered part one
Beautifully
2 weeks ago. So here, Rod, if you wondered where the rest of your email was, well, here it is. He says, the brilliant app I Like to Read Pro, which I use to read newspapers and magazines, is no longer compatible with iOS sharing. And whilst reading the HTML version on the NTM website is good enough, you need to ensure that you read the copy the same day. Don't tell me about Easy Reader. I put that in the same basket as the other one that everyone seems to love. Voice Bad Dream Reader.
Oh, yeah. Not a fan.
Stephen, when you talk about using headphones whilst flying high, it often sounds like you are using Bluetooth. How do you manage that whilst your phone is in flight mode?
Well, that's an interesting question, Rod, because this was something actually a guy sitting next to me on a flight told me how to do, and it never really occurred to me at all. So what happens is when you go into a flight, you put your phone into flight mode. Okay, but what that does, of course, as you will know, Rod, is that it kills your Bluetooth and it kills Wi-Fi. And, you know, it puts the phone into essentially a kind of locked off mode so it can't receive any signals. However, what I didn't know is that even though the phone is in airplane mode, you can then go to the Bluetooth button and then double tap on it and it will only activate the Bluetooth. So even though the phone can't receive any other signals, you can still use Bluetooth on a plane. So even way up in the air, you can still use it. That's a really nice function. So there you go.
Yep.
I know you're not blown away. I know. I answered a question for once, and I know I'm amazing. But there you go.
Controversially, do we still need to put our phones into airplane mode? Is this not modern?
I just despair about this. That my phone, which, you know, it was an expensive phone, but, you know, compare that to the cost of a jumbo jet. I kind of think that I'd like to think that little phone isn't going to bring down that jet.
That's my line of thinking as well, yeah.
My line of thinking is that if they leave it to people having to do it themselves, then it can't be a showstopper.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
They would take your phones off you.
That's true. Yeah. That's very
Stephen
true.
Stephen starts trying to connect to his Bluetooth headphones and the plane starts taking a
wobbling
nosedive.
Wobble.
You'd be worried,
you? Know, it's funny. The amount of times I've been on a plane and I've forgotten. You know, it's like my iPad usually. I've left my iPad on and I've forgotten to put it into flight safe mode. And I always think, I hope if anything goes wrong in this flight, I'm going to feel really guilty.
Yeah.
But, you know, nothing has. So, you know, whatever. I don't know. I don't understand. And I think in the States, there's less concern about it now as much as there used to be.
I think it's legacy. I think the systems, the electronic systems in all of those kind of, you know, high-tech travel situations are hardened, what they call hardened, because otherwise it's just, you know, wide open for a terrorist to come on board with his phone, not obey the
just turn the phone on and suddenly that's it. Yeah, it's very bizarre.
You're not going to get any phone calls or any messages because you're far away from any kind of 4G signal or any kind of...
I think you can use... No, I could be wrong in this, but I know you can use your phone in the States. Is it Wi-Fi that they use?
They have Wi-Fi aboard and then they have an antenna on the plane, which...
Yeah. That's clever, then.
That's pretty smart, isn't it? You don't have that here yet. Maybe one day. Mind you, in saying that, the one thing I do like about flying is the peace and quiet away from the phone. So maybe that's one of the annoying things, isn't it? If
with your AirPods Pro noise cancellation.
Oh, I love my AirPod Pros. Love them. Okay, hope that helps, Rod. And yes, let's maybe not talk about EasyReader in front of Rod, then. Okay,
Fine.
What else?
This one is from Bilal. I just wanted to let you know I really, really enjoy your show.
Thanks, Bilal.
I am registered blind and I am getting some Galaxy Buds in the post soon. I can't wait for them to be delivered.
Oof.
Chances are you probably had them already, Bilal, and you're listening to us now.
Through the Samsung Buds, yeah.
I wanted to know, how do you assemble the earbuds? How do you put the ear tip into the wingtip? Do you need sighted assistance? Also, how do you know which direction they're going into the charger when you're charging them in the case?
That's
from Bilal.
Now I've got these. And I'll be honest with you, Bilal, I wasn't the biggest fan. We're kind of a few weeks behind with some of these emails, so, you know, and I apologise about that. So you will probably have them, like Andy says, you're probably listening to us on them right now. I'll be honest, I hopefully you figured it out by now, but the little ear tips just come out. They just kind of ping off. It feels as if you're going to break them. That's the thing with all these things. I had this with the AirPod Pros as well. You kind of feel like you're going to break the little tips because they're just silicone. So what you do is you pull the silicone and then it pops off and then you can replace the tip with another. And they just kind of fit back into place. I just felt my way with them, to be honest. I didn't get any slight assistance with it. I just think just get a hold of the thing and break it and see if it... If it breaks, it breaks, right? I mean, we just buy another pair, don't we? Okay, maybe just me. But no, just grab the end of it, just grab the silicone, pull the bit off and then put it back on. It can only go on one way. That's the bottom line. As for putting them back into the case, they kind of only fit one way. I'll be honest, the AirPod Pros that I'm using, I'm finding those a bit more confusing because the way they feel like they're the wrong way around before you even start, but they're not. But they will only fit in to the case one way, so that actually should help. And in some ways, that's not a bad thing for us. Makes it a little bit easier. I hope you're enjoying them. I want you to tell us what you think, though, Bilal, because I wasn't sure about them. And my issue was that I felt I had to push them so far into my head that my head was sore wearing them. I just wasn't overly keen on them. So I'd be really interested to know what you think and how you're finding them. And also, I think ambient mode is what they call it. That's the mode where you can listen to what's going on around you. It's almost like transparency mode on the AirPod Pros. Again, interested to hear your thoughts, Bilal. Okay, what else?
Here's one from Alan. He says, "Hi team. An update on my experience with the accessible in-home display for a smart meter. I am a customer of Bulb Energy and I registered my request for an accessible smart meter in April after an episode of Tech Talk. Well, I have waited patiently since the summer availability date can mean anything from June to September, but I was finally contacted Bulb a week ago. The call handler had first to check with their supervisor what I meant by an accessible IHD, and then their response was that their supplier partners, Chameleon, whoever they are, did not have any in stock. I have followed up with more communications and their responses have been that there were not any of the selected suppliers that they quoted with the original RNIB reference in February, and nothing was available from stock from their third-party supplier of IHDs. They would contact me in due course when they had them in stock, and then finally, no timeline as to when they would be available. They have not answered queries as I made as to whether they had placed an order for the accessible IHDs. I passed on this feedback to RNIB last week, but no one from RNIB has been in touch as to what action I can take next. Here is an example of fine words and no actions and no recourse. I despair, says Alan. All a company has to do is either ignore things like this or make some corporate speak announcement and nothing changes. This is not new. Accessibility has been an issue for many years and we should have access now, he says in capital letters, not at some hand-waving future date. Where is the Equality Act in all of this? Where is the Consumer Protection Organisation taking positive legal action to hit these companies in the only place they understand, their pockets? I could move from Bulb Energy, but then it might be more expensive and it would be cutting my nose off despite my face. Here is a positive suggestion. RNIB publishes a list of those energy suppliers who will make accessible IHDs available together with their corresponding tariffs, perhaps even which could collaborate with that. That is from Alan. P.S., he says, have you heard of anyone from any supplier who has actually received an accessible IHD?
Well, we have, actually, yeah, we have had some success stories here, but they are few and far between at the moment. I can also say that since that email has come in, Alan, your email has been passed, as you've passed yourself, the email on to RNIB. A response has come out, and Bulb Energy is being contacted already by RNIB to try and find a solution to this. Ultimately, Bulb is a subsidiary of another company who do have access to these devices. That's the annoying thing. So once again, RNIB, and the name at RNIB for everyone to know is John Worsfold. He is the guy you want to talk to. So, and he I say this to everyone. Every time I see John, I always say, I'm going to give everyone your mobile number, and they're just going to keep annoying you until this gets fixed, John. John is not responsible for this necessarily, but he is the one who is in contact with these companies. So if you send me an email to the Tech Talk email address and you let me know that you're happy to pass it on to John, I will do that and we will keep pushing this campaign. John is very keen, more than keen, to do this. He has worked tirelessly on this for 2 years on this project to make this device actually happen. So, you know, imagine his frustration along with yours that it's not happening yet. It is just ridiculous, quite frankly. I'm with you on it, Al. I totally understand where you're coming from. Look, we'll leave it there for the emails for now because we're going to take a short break because, Andy, you have been telling us, or you're going to be telling us this week, all about a new audio game.
A new video game with a difference. Yeah, it's titled Pitch Black, A Dusk-Like Story, and it's an audio-only game, making it entirely accessible to the blind and visually impaired community. I recently spoke to one of the developers, Harry Cooper.
Pitch Black, A Dusk-Like Story.
Pitch Black, we're doing it the AAA audio game. And it's a binaural audio game project that features 3D explorable soundscapes and a variety of audio mechanics that are based on the fundamentals of human hearing.
So this is a unique video game in that it's completely audio-driven. There's no visual aspects in it whatsoever.
Yeah, quite. I mean, there are audio games that exist in the world and by a variety of developers, and perhaps we'll chat about them in a bit because a lot of them are great. But what we're aiming to do with this is sort of take the scope of an audio game beyond that which it's been to before. Often audio games are quite simplistic, not all of them by any means, but a lot of them have one or two sort of game mechanics and they don't feel like a fully fledged project. So the goal here is to take the niche of audio game and really expand it out so that the general public, as well as blind and visually impaired people, can be excited about the same sort of thing.
Yeah, because video games, and it's not something that we talk about a lot here at RNIB Connect Radio, because video games is predominantly something that is visually driven now. When you see video games and you see graphics now that are getting almost so realistic that it's hard to tell the difference. The last big AAA game that I bought, which was Red Dead Redemption 2, you could be playing that game and you're so immersed in the world that you forget that what the original Red Dead looked like. Visual aspects are getting so much better. Now, in your example, you're obviously taking away the visual aspects. So has creating this particular video game allowed you a greater creativity with playing with just audio?
I think what it dictates, really, as well as allows, is a change in focus. So one of the key things we wanted to do here is look at audio as a sense, as a modality, as a way of perceiving the world, and think, what can you get from hearing, from human audition, that you can't get from visuals? And there are actually a large number of different types of information you can get from audio that you just can't get from visual cues because of the physics of how that type of perception works. So we sort of started there, and from then on thought, okay, so these are the fundamentals. What can you do from a gameplay perspective that takes these fundamentals and creates challenges with them?
My God! It's you! How on earth did you get here?
Yeah, without getting too deep into the world of game design, so creators like yourself are aiming to get the player to move from point A to point B. Now, that's not just in terms of progressing the story and progressing the narrative of the game, but it's also in terms of physically moving your character through levels and through environments. Now, the example I'll give here is one of my favourite games, which was BioShock. Now, the first time you're using your character, the first time you get to manoeuvre your character, he comes out of the bathysphere and he's being guided audibly, yes, by another character saying, you know, got to get to higher ground. But the layout of that very first level is set in a certain pattern. It's designed so that you can only really go one way. Yeah. So how have you found that doing an audible game? Is there any limitations with doing something like that? Or is it allowed you greater expression on, you know, your character can be more in an open world setting? Or is there slight difficulties in saying, well, we need to get this character from here to the bar. So how do we do that audibly?
Yeah, so you can treat sort of the navigability of an area as one of the difficulty parameters within the game. So initially you might start off with a very open soundscape, such as a desert, and you've got one audio source from a very defined direction, and then a few bits of ambience and stuff. But because that's a very discernible place of interest for the player to move towards, that's quite a simple place to navigate. You turn and face it, and then you move in that direction. If you take a more busy environment, such as a city, you've got lots of points of interest there. And so what you're doing by placing those around is you're encouraging the player to explore. You can take a different approach as well, rather than using an open space, and think about corridors. So if you've got a corridor-based level, then moving through, you can only go in one direction. So it's very important to place audible sources at the end of each corridor. Alternatively, you can create small bits of fabric that might occlude the sound in a certain way and have those as obstacles, so you then have to move around them. So you can take the sort of how defined the layout of the level is and use that as one of the difficulty parameters in the level design of the game.
Up on your Kickstarter page, you have a couple of levels set in a demo format for people to get a feel of the game. So I downloaded it yesterday and had a play around. The binaural aspect, I'm such a huge fan of this, because you could be walking around, as you said, in a busy area, in the market area, and you're turning using either the arrow keys or WASD. You're moving around and you can hear people going from one side right across, so it's almost like they're behind you. You're walking forward and they get quieter. You can turn around again. And I was walking towards one particular character and I was wondering, am I close to him? I can hear him louder than I was before. Mm. And I just keep moving closer and closer to him. And then he started interacting with me. And I think, right, yeah, that's me right up close to him. So I just thought that was a really fantastic aspect to have. Could you explain for all our listeners, if anyone's unfamiliar with the term, could you explain what binaural audio is?
Sure, absolutely. Okay, so traditional two-channel audio is stereo. So you have a left channel and a right channel. And the reason that things sound either left or right is either due to volume differences. So if it's louder in your left ear, you perceive that as coming from the left. Or timing differences. So if a sound arrives at your left ear slightly sooner than it does at your right ear, then you also perceive that as coming from the left-hand side. Now, the problem with stereo audio, the reason why you don't get any up, down, or to the back, is that if you think about it, you aren't getting any vertical cues there, and there's also no difference between something coming from to the front left of you from the back left. Now, in real life, the reason humans can tell what's coming from behind them or above and below them is that there are a few reasons. One of them is your head actually absorbs certain frequencies before they reach the ear. So if you've got something coming from the left-hand side, your head is going to absorb a lot of the high frequencies before that sound wave reaches your right ear. And the same applies if it's front or back. So what you actually perceive is different. The other thing that affects it is the shape of your pinnae cause little boosts and decreases, I can't think of the right word, but they affect the frequency spectrum that actually gets to your inner ear, depending on the direction from which the sound is coming. Now, what binaural does is it recreates those effects in a virtual environment so that you can portray to the listener that something is above you or behind you, rather than just the stereo, which is left and right.
No, I mentioned BioShock earlier. I was getting a lot of BioShock vibes from the feel of Pitch Black. Mm. What games have inspired you?
BioShock's a very good one. Often part of the design process is you come up with these mood boards and you have certain words which really are meant to stimulate ideas for the game and what fits within it. And for hours, it was dark and eccentric, which essentially, if you think about BioShock, it's a very eccentric game. It's a very dark, very spooky game.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And so those words have really inspired the process of creating the world. Another big influence from literature is the film 1984. We really like the idea of this authoritative, controlling, sort of governing body. And other than that, post-apocalyptic settings such as Mad Max and the Fallout series have also been really inspiring to us.
So the company name is Purple Jam Limited. The game is called Pitch Black, A Dusklike Story. People will be able to find out more by going to Twitter and your Twitter handle, which is at DusklightPro. Tell everyone about your Kickstarter as well. You've reached the first initial goal.
So it's gone wonderfully well. We still have 13 days left. We managed to hit our minimum funding goal 4 days ago, I think. Which was £4,000, which is amazing. A massive thanks to any of our backers that may be listening, and then any voice actors that have contributed to the game. We really couldn't do this without that support. So that's been amazing. And we've also announced our first stretch goal, which is transferable saves between the desktop version of the game and the mobile. And also as a general sort of thanks for helping us do this, we announced that any blind and visually impaired schools worldwide can get access to a free copy of the game. And one of the reasons for doing that is multiple studies have shown that practicing navigation within virtual environments can help real-world navigation for blind and visually impaired people. So yeah, it's going really well.
You've got a set release date to the minute, or a rough release date, October 2020, is that correct, yeah?
Yes.
Fantastic. Well, Harry, it's been fantastic to chat to you. What I'm really interested is going to catch up with you in about 6 months' time and see how the game's progressing then.
Yeah, that would be great.
Fantastic. Harry, thank you very much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Now remember, Dust Lights one hell of a city, lad, so keep your wits about you. Not everyone's as holy as they say they are. In that wretched hole.
That is Pitch Black, A Dusklike Story. It's set to be released next October. It's for PC, Mac OS, Linux, and also for iOS and Android, so all your major devices. You can find out more information and follow the development of the project by following the team on Twitter at DusklightPro.
Linux.
Yeah.
News from the internet.
Hasn't using itself. Linux still going?
It's still going. Still out there.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's big. It's huge.
I know. People. I actually saw something the other day. In fact, speaking of news, I saw a portable computer, which, and I can never remember the name of this, but years and years and years ago, and I want to say Frankenstein, but that's not the name of it. It was a talking dictionary.
Franklin.
That's the one, the Franklin Talking Dictionary. I could not get the name of it, but I kept thinking of Frankenstein. And basically, this is exactly what this little computer looks like. It's like a large PDA. Remember the old PDAs that had the QWERTY keyboards? And HP used to make those, actually. Well, a similar kind of idea, Linux-based. That's what this thing's going to be made with. And I thought, if that was just Windows, I could have had that. But it's unlikely to happen, and certainly not going to be powerful enough to run JAWS, that's for sure. Anyway, let's get to the news. Speaking of Windows, Skype, woohoo, is getting an update, woohoo, and that's making it accessible, Robin.
Actually, they're nibbling away at accessibility. I mean, we know that it's accessible, it's just horrendously unusable.
Well, that's
now in a great big long, roll of wallpaper type of, controls and stuff, and you have to wade through everything, and it's horrible, and let's not talk about it because I'll get sad. But the one little silver lining is that in 8.54, I think it is the latest update, across all platforms, including Linux, they now have this multilingual support. Now, it's been available as an add-on bot in chat form, where every time you send messages to each other, it can automatically translate into 11 different languages on the fly, but now it's been integrated into it and you don't even have to switch anything on, and it supports voice calls as well. So if it detects that you're talking to somebody who's not speaking English, for example, then it will automatically translate and speak out to you in a robot voice in English, for example. So you can have live translation. It's the Babelfish, basically, isn't it? Live translation from any one of 11 different languages into any other. And you can also have the transcript on, which is a separate setting, which I really like, to get a full record of what everyone said on a call, and you can have that coming up as well. So at the end of the day, you can have a full transcript of your meeting with somebody, and it will always be in English, regardless of what languages the other person was speaking. So really cool.
Yeah, it is cool. And I think it's a great feature. And obviously that can, you know, work across disability. It can work across language barrier, all of that, which is fantastic. I just wish they could find an easy way for me to answer a call. You know,
yes.
It's great they've got all that, but could you just, could I answer the call? That would be nice. And then I can, you know, get it in 12 languages available to me. That is insane.
You tried to call me last week and I ended up sending two pictures to me.
I don't know how, I still have no idea how I managed to do that.
I didn't know you could do that.
But. Yeah.
There used to be a universal hotkey, so Skype didn't have to have focus, but at least now there are hotkeys for when you're in the app. So you'd have to quickly switch to the app and then, yeah, you know, on the Mac, for example, Command Shift R for pickup and Command Shift H for hang up for whatever reason.
But it is the problem that, you know, goes back to that point about accessibility and usability, isn't it? You know, something can be accessible, and yes, arguably it is because you can move around it, but it's just not very usable now.
It needs many more hotkeys. You're absolutely right.
Tell me.
That accessibility, the feature of having a transcript come up is cool, but yes, it's for people who have a hearing impairment, for example, so that they can follow what's being spoken. So yeah, you don't have to either be able to speak or hear to use Skype.
Tell me about Apple and this new in-car display that's being talked about.
Yeah, so there's a patent, so obviously it's, you know, vaporware at this point, but it definitely adds to the drum beats that there may well be an Apple driverless car at some point in the future. This is a patent for signage and instrumentation being displayed on all different kinds of surfaces, including fabric. So you could have signs lighting up on a car seat cover or back or wherever it might be, on doors, on the dashboard. And the article, the iMore article that I was reading this about this on, seemed to think that it would point towards there being a very minimalistic dashboard and instrument panel, you know, like just a flat surface that would detect as your hand gets close to the panel, or whether your eyes are, you know, it has eye detection to tell whether you're looking at the instrumentation, and they would light up on demand, as it were. So it uses either LEDs or fiber optics, depending on which it, that, you know, if it's in material, for example, it would probably be fiber optic cables woven into the fabric that could have very large areas for light up signs. And I think from a low vision point of view, this is actually a really good thing, because it doesn't mean that they're just little tiny, you know, signs that light up saying, you know, whatever they're going to say. You could have an infinite canvas, really, that would, you would be able to choose to have really high vis, high contrast information coming up. And because we're talking driverless here, don't forget, guys, that, you know, there's going to be other options as well for, you know, perhaps you could control it with your app, with a particular app, say, but it won't rely on you having to interact with things necessarily to be able to get from A to B. But I thought this was a really interesting story, basically making all surfaces within Apple cars able to be used as a place where you can convey information.
Very interesting. Okay. Look, I'm more interested in something that you got recently. You have been out and spending your birthday money, Robin.
Yeah. Let's have a listen to this fantastic smart coffee mug that I still use, by the way. I've had it for a week or so now. I love it. Hey guys, I am here in our local cafe, and I just thought this would be a good place to review this Ember smart mug, which I got for my birthday yesterday. It was my birthday this weekend, and it's not cheap, £70, but it's really, really good. I would say if Apple were ever going to design a smart mug that keeps your beverage at exactly the temperature that you prefer, then they would design something like this. So let's give a brief description of what you get in the box. You get the mug itself, you get a saucer, which is what you pop it on to charge, a power cable with a little adapter pluggy thing on the end that you plug into the wall, and two adapters for both US 2-prong and UK 3-prong that you can slide on or off, and they click into place in the kind of little blob that you plug into the wall. And it's really, really good. I got the white enamel one, and I've just got it here in front of me, just tapping it. It's, I think, steel inside, but coated with enamel, and it looks very elegant. It looks like a normal sized coffee cup, about 2.5 inches wide, maybe 8 centimeters around the top, and probably about 10 centimeters tall. A tallish coffee cup, but very elegant, and I'm told it looks really nice, and it's got nice, you know, mouth feel, etc. So very heavy, because there is a battery and heating element inside this coffee cup. You can't dishwash it, you can't put it in the microwave for obvious reasons, but it's easy to hand wash. Don't use anything too abrasive on it, otherwise it might damage the enamel. And underneath, it's got a rubber sort of coating at the very bottom so that it doesn't slip around on the surface that you put it on. And there's also a button underneath some rubber at the very bottom, which you use to pair the device. Don't worry about turning it on or off. You just use it from then on, and from time to time, check its battery status in the app that it comes with. So how does it work? Well, you put it on its saucer. The saucer here is about 4 or 4.5 inches across, maybe 13 centimeters. And apart from the middle bit that the cup sits on to charge, there's an inch, sort of 2.5 centimeter wide bit around the edge that is the saucer part, and that's flat, that's horizontal. So there's a horizontal ring. It looks just like a normal saucer, basically, and I'm assuming that that's white as well. And you plug the power into this saucer, and I used it this morning to keep my coffee at exactly 57.5 degrees centigrade, which is what it recommends on the app for just normal coffee. And it used up 24%, I think it was down to 76%. So this would go for 3 or 4 days, or 3 or 4 uses before you have to put it back on the saucer again. So you could just pop it back in the cupboard after you've given it a rinse, and you don't need to worry about charging it until it's, you know, the battery starts to get low. Now, if you can see, there is a light towards the bottom of the mug, on the actual mug itself, not on the saucer. And you can't feel where that light is. It's probably under the enamel somehow or something. And it's very close to the table. And that changes colour as the battery starts to wear out. But obviously, we can't see that, but it's easy to check in the app. The app, by the way, has unlabeled buttons. Some of them have a very long string of nonsensical characters. But at the end, it says, possibly settings. You know how iOS works. It can automatically grab the label for you. Now, unfortunately, in iOS 13.2, and for a while now, the label of an item feature, which is two-finger double tap and hold, doesn't work. So as soon as that's not broken, we'll be able to label those buttons once and for all. So there you go, that's how you use it. You don't turn it on, you don't turn it off. Once it's got enough charge, you pop your coffee in it. It keeps exactly the right temperature you want, right down to the last sip. You don't need to worry about putting it on the saucer or anything. You're just, you know, doing whatever you do, wherever you put your coffee mug down. And you don't have to worry about it. And then just give it a quick rinse afterwards, and there you go. So it's very, very elegant, very easy to use. And apart from the inaccessibility of some of the features in the app, I think it's absolutely brilliant. I should also say, in the app, there are other presets. So it suggests a different temperature for latte, for tea, black tea, green tea, purple tea, which I've never heard of. But so there are other presets in there as well. So for a present leading up to Christmas, or maybe on a Black Friday deal, this is definitely something to consider. So there you go, Ember Mug. By the way, guys, I'm not actually in a cafe at all. Alexa, stop. That's Sleep Sounds, Cafe Sounds, one of the many thousands of skills in the Echo Skill Store. Thanks, guys. Back to the studio.
Thanks, Robin. That does sound rather nice. Okay, let's move on because I think we need to get back to some more emails, guys.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
Right, Andy, let's get back to the email inbox because I really want to start getting through more of these emails.
Oh, we've got plenty to go through. This one is from Sandra. Hi, Steve and Robin. I recently upgraded my iPhone from a 6S to an 8 Plus. It's great. I love the wireless charging feature, and the 8 and 8 Plus still retain the home button, which is the last iPhone to do so. I did have to spend last weekend re-registering most of my apps, which seemed like it was taking a lifetime to do. Pleased to have achieved this successfully. That's from Sandra in Bristol.
It's one of those things, Robin, it really annoys me every time you get a new phone like this. I mean, and especially an iPhone, you can do the whole sort of almost cloning, if you like, of the device, where you can, you know, bring everything back, all the apps back to where you want, you know, all the positioning, all that. But it doesn't log them back in. You've still got to go back through every single app. I mean, my banking apps, you know, I sound like I've got a million bank accounts, but, you know, you're through these different apps and you're, oh, I need to remember this number, and I've got to re-register this, and I've got to re-register that. Oh, I don't like it. Can they fix that? Robin, can they fix that?
I thought it might have been 12 or 13, that if you have the phones close to each other and you initiate a kind of a thingamabob, that's the technical term for it.
Technical term, yeah.
Then it passes over. It sends over all of the
it does.
Passwords and that sort of thing.
No, well okay.
Don't so know.
It does and it doesn't. Because what it does is it'll send over the contact, or not contact, the Apple, what do you call it?
ID, in fact.
ID, your Apple ID.
Yeah.
It'll transfer all that across, which of course in turn takes over your, Wi-Fi, that's what I'm trying. What is wrong with my brain today? I'm still not right.
How did that drop out of your head?
I don't know. I'm glad it's that dropped
out. Not well.
I'm still not well. But yeah, the Wi-Fi goes over and it will, you know, bring over all the sort of locations of the apps and everything. It'll download all the apps and it'll put everything back to where it was. But it doesn't put the phone back into what I would call ready-to-go state, which is kind of annoying, if I'm honest. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
just buy one every 3 years like me, that's fine.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, unlike me, buying one every 5 minutes. Okay, Andy, what else is in the inbox? And thank you for your email.
Mm-hmm. This is from Jamie. Hi, Stephen, Robin and Andy. Just a short email here about the different streaming devices. I currently have an Amazon Fire TV stick as well as the Amazon Echo. I use apps like YouTube and Netflix on a regular basis, but not so much BBC iPlayer and the ITV Hub. This is because the voice view on the Fire Stick does not work on the two latter apps, which is frustrating. You want to watch something on these particular applications in the comfort of your own bedroom, and once you're on the app, it's pretty much impossible as a completely blind person to go anywhere. Lately, I have been thinking about purchasing an Apple TV, but as it is pretty expensive, that probably won't be for some time yet. Do you have any recommendations on what I should be looking for in this particular area in terms of purchasing a streaming device like the ones I mentioned at the start of the email? Thank you very much, from Jamie.
Yeah, Apple TV, Jamie. Just get an Apple TV. Stop wasting your money. Just get on with it and buy an Apple TV. I mean, it's the most accessible device out there. I was watching a movie the other night called Earthquake Bird, which was a terrible movie, right? But the audio description on it was fantastic. And what is interesting is that you can manipulate, this is handy if you've got low vision, you can manipulate the subtitles as well so that you can have them almost the size of the screen if you want. The size of the print, I think, is up to 56 point on the TV, which is pretty large. And a single line of text will take up a third of the screen. And that is incredible. Obviously, I mean, if there are subtitles on the screen, you will not see anything else because that's just going to be subtitle. But if you struggle to read them, then you can enlarge that. So that's one thing. You've got all the apps that are fully accessible on there. One by one, those apps are starting to have audio description in them. BBC iPlayer does. The My 5 app, the Channel 4 app as well. ITV, sadly, not yet. Now TV, sadly, not yet. Prime does on some content. Netflix does on others. But all these apps are fully accessible. You can use all of them. You're never going to be faced with that situation that you've got with the Fire TV Stick. I think the Fire TV Stick could be so much better. But unfortunately, it's the third party apps that let it down. And that's not the case with Apple TV. So I don't know what that says, but I wish you well. The other option, of course, is the Synaptic TV box, but I think you're running at £650 for that. Mm. But that is a fully accessible box, but you don't get as many on-demand options on that. I think for the price point, I would look online for a second-hand Apple TV. You don't need 4K. I would get one of the newer ones that's got the hard drive in it, 64 gig or 128 gig. But you know, and again, Black Friday's not far away, is it? So, you know, you could get a good deal there.
That's what I was going to say, a second-hand or refurbished non-4K one. Is that the fourth gen?
I think it might be later than that. I can't remember. I know there was the Apple TV. There was a kind of thinner Apple TVs, the slightly smaller ones. Those are still usable, but it's the one with the App Store that you really want, because that's the one, of course, that's got all of the capability to download all these different players. And it is a very accessible, it's a lovely device to use. And I'll be honest, if Now TV, which is essentially Sky, was to move all of its content on there and to be audio described, I'd cut the cord on completely on satellite, and I would just have that one device for everything. I love it, and I hope Apple keep doing it, because there are rumours they may move away from that, instead focusing on building their TV app into other devices. Hopefully that won't happen. Hopefully it won't be left aside. It's always been the hobby project for Apple, but hopefully they keep it going for the next while. Look, we've got time for just one more email, a very brief one, Andy.
A very brief one. This one is from Charlie. Hi, enjoyed the podcast. Got a question about the buds. I have an XR and I use VoiceOver. Can I Bluetooth pair the phone to the buds in order to hear VoiceOver accessing the apps on the phone? Best, Charlie.
Now, which buds are we talking about here? Are we talking Echo Buds? Are we talking Samsung Buds?
Buds.
Just Buds.
Just Buds.
Either way, though, they're just a Bluetooth set of headphones. So, yeah, you won't be doing anything fancy with AirPlay there, which gives you the option of either having VoiceOver being put through that or staying on the phone. So the answer would be yes.
Yeah, that's one of the fun things. Actually, do you know, I found a little bit of a fault with that whole thing, because as you'll know, if you've maybe done this before, if you've AirPlayed out to, say, a HomePod or to another speaker that's AirPlay-enabled, you might have noticed that you're able to still retain VoiceOver on your device, which is brilliant if you're wanting to listen to music, because then you can sort of still find the next track without VoiceOver booming out over the speaker. However, interesting flip side to this, I AirPlayed out, because you can do this now, you can AirPlay from your Apple TV to another speaker. So I did that to my HomePods, and it retained the VoiceOver on the Apple TV, which of course isn't connected to anything. So, you know, you've moved your sound over to the other device. So, yeah, that was a bit of a nuisance. So it's not perfect, but it's getting there. Anyway, look, our hour is up. Next week, we are at TechShare Pro. Well, this week, actually, we're at TechShare Pro. But we'll be recording our show for next week there. So tune into that next Tuesday at the usual time. Keep your emails coming in as well. We'd love to hear from you. Just keep them coming to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We will have the email inbox with us, and Andy as well, with his eyes.
Yes, see you in London.
And we'll catch you soon. Robin, thanks once again.
Thanks, guys.